On today's episode of the Telehealth Heroes podcast, we get to talk to psychologist Dr. Stephanie Salcedo-Rosic, who is a psychologist who specializes in mental health crises. Here at Doximi, we've been feeling the effects of the Ukraine crisis and war because many of our employees are actually based in Ukraine. So this topic has got a special meaning to us, and so we're especially excited to talk to Dr. Stephanie today to talk a little bit about her experience in providing mental health and care to those who are dealing with crisis and during difficult times. And so, Dr. Rosic, thank you so much for coming to the show today.
Thank you. And you can just call me Stephanie.
Great, Stephanie. You call me Brandon. So Stephanie, how did you first get into healthcare and decide you wanted to become a psychologist?
Yeah, so I really fell in love with psychology in undergrad. I went to college at Harvard, and so I took psychology courses there, and I decided I really wanted to go into graduate school and get my PhD. So I got my PhD in clinical psychology from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And so there I studied bipolar disorder as well as a wide variety of mental health conditions. And my research focused a lot on assessments and cultural consideration, so looking globally at the assessments that we have available. For my internship and fellowship training, I wanted to get more experience with PTSD and trauma, I wanted to get more experience with PTSD given how there's a lot of co-occurrence with mood disorders and PTSD. And so I sought an internship opportunity at the VA healthcare system in Durham. And so I've been there ever since. I did my internship and my fellowship training there. And now I'm currently a licensed clinical psychologist working at one of their outpatient clinics in one of their all virtual teams.
And I bet being at the VA, you see a lot of people who face pretty difficult challenges in their life and in war and other challenges. What's the most difficult part of providing care to individuals with this type of issue or challenge?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I think the hardest part is really hearing individual stories of what they've gone through, like, you know, working with veterans and seeing a lot of, like, hearing about a lot of different traumas that they've experienced, both in childhood, in the military, in their personal lives. And it can be really hard because there's a lot that they've experienced, and listening to them and really sitting with them, sitting in that, like, you know, those difficult emotions with them can be really challenging. And going to therapy isn't easy, and seeing the challenges with that as well. I think, so there's definitely a lot of hard work that goes into it.
So as you know, the war going on in Ukraine, we have a lot of personal contacts, employees who actually live in Ukraine and are dealing with this crisis. And I actually had the opportunity to go to Ukraine a couple of weeks ago and see the people there, and you know, I think for many of them, they're still in the midst of it, and you know, I think maybe their adrenaline is still going, and like, we got to survive, right? And it's something that I thought about afterwards is like, what are the long-term consequences of this experience? Right now, their adrenaline's going, they're surviving, they're going, but what's going to happen? What is it going to look like? And what challenges are they going to face in the coming months and years, even after Russia goes away and back to normal life?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, one thing I want to start out with is really normalizing and validating those experiences. Like, it's very common and normal for individuals to react like in a wide variety of ways to trauma. What people are experiencing there, especially those who are over there and seeing it in their day-to-day lives. It's very normal to be feeling a lot of panic, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of stress and not knowing what's going to happen. And so what we know from the research is that, you know, that those are all normal reactions to trauma, and they're very common. Over time, people can react to trauma differently. So as time progresses and, you know, the situation either improves or the situation changes, for some individuals, you know, there aren't as many long-term effects. So, but for others, those symptoms can linger. And so that's when like this feelings of depression, of panic, of feeling like you're having trouble thinking about things other than what you experienced, the longer those last, that's when it can get in the way of, one's daily life, and it can develop into PTSD or depression or like an anxiety disorder. And so it can really like individuals are vary a lot in terms of how they respond to trauma and stress, but what we've seen is that for a percentage of individuals, those symptoms can linger past the trauma, and that's when seeking mental health care it would be beneficial.
And what advice would you have for those individuals who are still in Ukraine that are facing this to help maintain their mental health during this crisis?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it can be really challenging, especially because that they're in a situation where it's entirely out of their control. A lot of it is, right? Being over there and like this fear of like not knowing what's going to happen to your home or your family. And I think the first thing is really like giving yourself grace and permission to not be okay. Like this isn't business as usual. These emotions are very human and normal reactions, and allowing yourself the space to really grieve and feel some of the other emotions that you're feeling. And so I think this advice could apply for individuals that are over there, and also people who are over in the States or other parts of the world that are watching this, either like through the news or through hearing about it with other people, is that it's very normal to be experiencing these reactions, and like giving yourself that time to grieve and to process what's going on. Obviously there's like a time and place, of course, but just no, like allowing yourself that time to really feel what you're feeling, and also like taking breaks and taking time away if needed. So I think those are one of the biggest things that you can do, especially like if you're like kind of watching what's playing out, recognizing that like it's normal for it to impair your ability to like concentrate or do your work or have conversations with people, and really checking in with yourself on what you need, and integrating extra activities or like self-care or mental health days that could be beneficial for you. So I think the biggest thing is people can often be very hard on themselves and like judge themselves for the reactions that they're having, and recognizing that like there's a lot of pain going on right now, and it's okay to let yourself feel that pain and not be operating at 100%.
I can also imagine how isolating it can feel. There's collective suffering going on in Ukraine. So it's not one thing if somebody gets in an accident or gets traumatized somehow, everybody else around them is fine. But in Ukraine, everybody is being traumatized by this collectively. And there's probably some value in just being open and talking about feelings because everybody can empathize and be like, yeah, I feel this discomfort as well. How important is talking about it with others to this whole process?
I think it's very important. I think, one of the things that it's very normal to want to push these emotions away and not want to talk about it and compartmentalize. And of course, like I mentioned, there's a time and place. So like if you need to get through the day and solve problems and figure out what you're going to do the next day, like it makes sense. You don't have time to think about their emotions and process what you're feeling. However, the just think about that. The more you do that over time, if you don't, it, it's I, the way I like to think about emotions is sort of like this metaphor I love to share. It's like this inflatable beach ball metaphor. Like think about a beach ball, and you're holding on to it, and you're putting it in like a body of water, like an ocean or a pool. You're pushing down. What happens as soon as you let go of that beach ball?
Shoots right back up.
Exactly, and that's how I like to think about emotions. Is that there's a point to pushing them away at times. Like sometimes you need to get through the day and get things done, but the longer you do that, the more like the longer you do that, there comes a point where any sort of instance where you let go, they're going to come back up, and they're going to come back up stronger. And so allowing yourself to give yourself that time to process what's going on. And that can mean talking to others, reaching out to friends or family and saying, hey, I'm not doing okay, or I want to talk about what's going on. And even if it's just to to vent or to talk about your emotions without necessarily going into problem solving mode, because with these really complex situations, there's not usually a very clear cut solution or answer, right? But talking about those emotions can be helpful. And also doing things letting yourself cry or feel emotions if you prefer to do it in a private space, or journaling, but finding those opportunities to really process and let yourself feel those emotions could be super, super helpful.
So, Stephanie, what are some warning signs to look out for people who may be struggling with issues during crisis or conflict that we could somebody could self-identify or seeing somebody else as something like, hey, this person probably needs some help?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because as we've talked about, a lot of these reactions are very normal and common, and so it makes sense, why one might be reacting in such a way in response to seeing current events and seeing what's unfolding. And I think, one of the like some of the major warning signs to look out for, I kind of all fall under this umbrella of, is it get is it starting interfere is it starting to interfere with your day-to-day life? And so what I mean by that is, are you having difficulties with sleep, for example, or you're having trouble getting work done, and to the point where maybe you're noticing you're missing deadlines on projects, or you're not getting back to colleagues or emails. Thinking about, in what ways is your life, is your mental health getting in the way of the things you need to get done in your life? Or your relationships with people, for example. So are you isolating from people? Are you not wanting to talk to your friends or your family? And also thinking about these pervasive feelings that you might be having. Are you noticing having feelings of worthlessness or hopelessness, to the point of maybe even having more negative thoughts about wanting to hurt yourself? Definitely seeking professional help in that regard. One other thing I'll mention is sometimes in these situations there might be tendencies to want to self-medicate with things. If you're noticing, if you drink alcohol, but you're noticing it's your amount has increased and you're doing it more and more to kind of cope with these negative feelings, or you're using drugs or other substances, that might also be a sign that, maybe talking to someone to seek professional help might be beneficial.
So considering that talking about it, whether with other people who are going through it or with a professional expert like yourself, how valuable is telemedicine and being able to do this by video to this, to be able to talk to somebody about these things?
In my experience, I've been doing telemedicine for since March of 2020, and I've found it really helpful, because I think it's for me, it's been helpful to be able to reach individuals that otherwise would not have access to care, or it would be very hard or inconvenient for them to seek access to care. I don't have as much experience or any experience seeking or doing telemedicine with folks abroad, but with the veterans that I work with, for example, sometimes individuals live far away from the VA, or don't have stable transportation, or have a very busy work schedule, and it can be very challenging for them to come into the VA and meet in person. And in the pandemic, we weren't able to meet in person. So I think that being able to do telemedicine has been really helpful, in that more people, I think, are able to get access to care who maybe otherwise were not able to, and be able to spend, be able to still go to work and get things done.
Now, have you provided telehealth into high conflict zones, something like Ukraine? Well, you're dealing with mostly VAs, so probably not. But how, I mean, do you see an opportunity there in providing telehealth into these places where conflict and crisis and challenging things are happening in that moment?
Yeah, so that's not like I haven't provided care to individuals in high conflict areas, but what I can speak to is my experience with telehealth, and I think there are some areas where I think it could generalize. So I think it can potentially be a valuable tool. I don't know what the literature says right now about what the telemedicine in high conflict areas, but I imagine that, especially with individuals who aren't able to leave their homes due to safety concerns, there are a lot of individuals who have smartphones who may not have a computer, but have a smartphone, and as long as you're connected in some way, like via like data, being able to either use an app or a website to connect with a provider, I think that could really, really helpful and close that gap in terms of access. Also, individuals who are maybe displaced from their homes and not and don't have their typical tools, like if there's a way to act like provide access to individuals that way, I think mobile phones have been really helpful in that regard. And I think telemedicine could be really helpful for people living in high conflict areas. I think the one of the main things that I reflect on is just making sure as much as possible to reduce the burden on those individuals. So trying to make it as easy as possible for them to connect, and also providers to recognize that you can't take the same approach like in your typical practice. So being flexible in terms of the timing and the length of sessions, recognizing that it's an ever-changing situation for those individuals. And if you can only meet for 20 minutes, you can only meet for 20 minutes, it's better than nothing, and you're still helping them. And focusing at least on the mental health side on interventions that are focused on like coping skills and dealing with stress, since you don't really know how long you might be meeting with the person before the situation changes. So I think I imagine there's still probably some logistical things to think about, but overall, I think telehealth would be really helpful in those areas.
Right, absolutely. So it's interesting. You sought out a position that was 100% telehealth. Why? What was your motivation?
I think for me, it was, I think I just was really impressed at what I was able to accomplish in these telehealth sessions. Granted, I do like, there are aspects of my job that I miss. I do miss being able to go into the office and meet with my patients individually in person. I think I feel like that there's that human connection aspect of it that I still miss. But I was really surprised and impressed with how I felt like I was able to get a lot more done in my sessions with via telehealth, like just the capabilities, being able to share a video and for us to like my patient and I be able to watch a video together and react to it, or I can draw something and share my screen. Just I felt like there were just a lot of different ways I could deliver this therapy that was dynamic and interesting, and helped meet the veteran where they were at in terms of like the concepts that I was teaching. And so that's what I really liked about it. And also too, like I think the getting rid of a lot of the logistical barriers, like I could meet with an individual during their lunch break, and sometimes they took a session in their car with their smartphone, and we still got a lot done. And so I think for me, that's what something I'm really passionate about is really reducing barriers to mental health care, and telehealth has been really helpful with that.
And if somebody is struggling with these things, what are your recommendations for how to cope with it or how to handle it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think like acknowledging that, that's what's going on, and trying to reach out to like a loved one or someone that you trust, and letting them know that you're having these issues is really important. So instead of like dealing with it by yourself, reaching out, because in that mind space, sometimes it can be hard to think about solutions because like you're feeling, really, really negatively about the world. It can be hard to really think about, what the options are out there. So getting someone else's advice, if you work, if whenever possible, taking mental health days and taking breaks as well could be really important. And just taking the time away from, your pri like what you're supposed to be doing to prioritize your mental health can be important. And then if you're interested in like seeking mental health care, there are a wide variety of avenues where you can do that. So you can seek a referral through your medical providers, or depending on what your employment situation is, some employers offer like employee assistance programs, or you can reach out to mental health care services that way. And there's also different ways where you can seek help. There's like their national crisis hotline, 1-800-273-TALK, if you're ever having really really challenging thoughts of wanting to hurt yourself. That's another a resource there as well.
So there's a lot going on in the world, and there's a lot of sentiment of concern between COVID, the economy, the war in Ukraine, and often feels like in many ways that these things are too big to handle or too big for any one person to control or solve, and it's just kind of I just got to just handle it, right? And so what are some healthy ways that people can do to help cope with these feelings of helplessness and despair or anger?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it's a very common sentiment. It's very normal right now to be feeling really helpless and hopeless and a lot of anger right now. And like if you're watching in the news, you're being constantly shown these very disturbing images. And so it's very easy to get overwhelmed and feel paralyzed with all these emotions and thought that there's nothing that you can do. And so I think one of the biggest pieces of advice I'd like to throw out there for folks is really start to think about and reflect on what are the things that you can control and what are the things that you can't. And so, there are just unfortunately certain aspects of these crises that you cannot control. For example, you can't control what decisions the world, like world leaders make, the course of this war, when it's going to end. And I think acknowledging that and feeling that pain that, there are certain things that you can't control is really important. However, that doesn't mean that there's not anything that you can't do anything or that everything's out of your control. So really reflecting, okay, what are the things in the situation I can control? For example, think about maybe organizations that you want to get involved in that are helping with the refugee crisis right now, either through donating money or finding organizations, nearby that might be helping move refugees to different parts of the world. Also, checking in with your friends and colleagues, asking how they're doing, asking if they need anything, especially like if you have people that you know that are over in Ukraine or over in these areas, like checking in with them, seeing what they need, kind of focusing your energy on like what are ways to help. And helping one person, that's still huge, even though there are a lot of these aspects that you can't change. Being able to have a positive impact in someone's life is still significant. Contacting a representative or like reaching out and advocating for a particular view or action, using your voice to maybe like write a blog post or post on social media. Those are different ways that you can help. And I also think, lastly, what I'll say too is really listen to, what your emotions are telling you, like they're, what they're communicating. And sometimes that might mean setting limits about or around how much social media you should consume or how often you should be watching the news or reading articles. And so I think people often think that, if you're not reading all the articles or reading the news 24/7, that there's this guilt that sets in that you're not being informed. And I think thinking about it more, kind of like it's that both can exist. You can be informed and know what's going on, and also set limits for your mental health. And so thinking about like what the limits are for you and taking breaks, and it's okay to put some space in between. In order to be able to prioritize your mental health too, because if you don't prioritize your mental health, it's going to be hard for you to be able to help others and be there for others as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. I know when I went to, I felt a lot of like, I don't know, survivor guilt, I guess, with, I'm here in the States, I'm safe, and a good chunk of my team over there in Ukraine is, are refugees or moving or facing all these challenges. And I felt that burden. And I had the opportunity and the means to go fly to Poland and be able to drive into Ukraine and go help and deliver supplies. And I know the way I felt before I was able to do that, and the way I felt now, I mean, the same things are happening, but I feel like I know I've made an impact. And it wasn't, I didn't do that much, but it was just, I felt that personally to know that I was able to do even that little bit. It didn't change the war, it didn't change the outcome, but for my own, self-worth, mental health, whatever, it did help, and it gave me, it satisfied that feeling that I had that I was that I was what was helpless over here in the States. That I know I was able to go do something. And oh yeah, I get it. Not everybody's able to fly to Poland or whatever and go into Ukraine and deliver supplies, but there are definitely things we can do, like talk to your representative or donate money or whatever, that, or spread the word, and it can help. And I think it's important to be proactive, not just sit by and be passive and let life happen to you. You gotta take the bull by the horns and make things happen, and it will change your happiness and your health, your mental health, and the outcomes of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really speaks to this idea of like really listening to what emotions you're feeling and recognizing that like if you're feeling helpless or if you're feeling angry, it's because, you know, your values are telling you that, you know, you want to help other people and what you're seeing is truly awful and you want to make a difference. And so listening to that and going, okay, like what are ways I can make a difference, even if it's, you know, helping one person or helping like a family or a group of people, like that is still significant, and every little bit helps in this situation.
So it's important to, when you feel it, when you feel something you can do, to act on it and to do it, and don't let it pass by.
Yeah.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for your time today. Really, really appreciate your insights and your expertise, and especially at this time where there are a lot of folks who are dealing with these things. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.